The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420. The Answer.
Welcome indeed. It is 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, and we are underway on AM 1420. The Answer. It's a Tuesday. Makes it the 16th morning of the month of April in the year of our Lord 2024. And Tuesday, of course, is a Kersenow day. So we've got Kersenow waiting in the wings. He'll be joining us in about 1 hour with his special brand of commentary and observation and analysis. We're definitely looking forward to that. Also, today is the 16th morning of April, and it means what we've been promising for about a month is going to happen. We're going down to Kent today, and we're looking for some souls to save. Yeah, I just did that. I'm not going to rhyme. We're going to Kent, and we're going to support Kyle Rittenhouse today. He's going to be speaking tonight. He, of course, is famous, if not infamous, for protecting and defending himself during the George Floyd riots in Kenosha, Wisconsin, back in 2020. He stood trial for murder. And he was acquitted on every charge that he faced. He is now a hero to the Second Amendment community and a pariah to the radical progressive BLM supporting and Antifa lovers on the left. That's just the reality of it. He's speaking tonight at Kent State as part of a tour put on by Turning Point USA. And the protesters have already announced they're coming for him. And we are going to be there to support him. Myself, a whole lot of people I know, and a whole lot of listeners like you, and I hope you will be joining us. We'll tell you the details about that coming up. But we're going to talk coming up at 11:10 with Brady Seymour. He is the Kent State Turning Point USA representative. Seth, what are we calling Brady? Young man who's organizing this thing. He's got a very small conservative club started at Kent State, and he's the one who's partnering with Turning Point to bring Kyle to speak today. What is his title? Do you remember?
The chapter president.
Chapter president. Turning Point USA chapter president, right?
Turning Point USA chapter president for Kent State.
Thank you, good sir. Seth says he's the chapter president. We talked to Brady about a month ago when this thing was announced, and we wanted to kind of coordinate a little bit. But we will be there. The event is, again, it's a ticketed event. You can't just come. You have to have a ticket, but you can get the tickets for free if you go and register. I don't know if there's any left. It's a 400-seat auditorium from what we are told. Not sure how the whole thing is going to play out. The Kiva Auditorium or Kiva Student Center on the campus of Kent State University. We are going to be meeting there in the parking lot a little early, around 4:30 today. The thing starts at 6 o'clock because we don't know how they're going to handle admissions. Who's going to be allowed in? Is it first come, first serve? There have already been protests and plans to shout him out of the venue. So we're going to go down there and we're going to support it. So we'll talk to Brady about all of that coming up at 11:10. So Kersenow at 10:10. Brady will join us at 11:10, and I want you to join us all morning long at 216-901-0945.
and 888 or 888-281-1110. You don't actually have to call both numbers. It doesn't really work very well. But we will indeed take your calls. Before we do anything else, what do you say we pledge allegiance to our country, to our flag anyway that represents our country? If you're a patriot, stand. And if you are a Marxist dog, go ahead and take a knee. For those of us who believe,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we've got us a top 9 at 9 to start our day this morning.
It's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
These are some of the top stories we are interested in discussing with you today.
Number one.
Hundreds of anti-Israel protesters shut down San Francisco's Golden Gate Bridge on Monday amid a wave of protests springing up around the country. Activists protesting the war in Gaza shut down Highway 101 and the Golden Gate Bridge, snarling the commute into San Francisco, resulting in multiple arrests. Pro-Palestinian protesters blocked off the entrance to O'Hare International Airport in Chicago as well, preventing cars from reaching the terminals, forcing some flyers to abandon their cars and walk to get to the airport to catch their flights. Several protest groups shared videos on Instagram showing a group of people sitting with their arms interlocked on the Interstate 190 access road between Kennedy Expressway and O'Hare, blocking all lanes of traffic headed to the airport. Meanwhile, in New York City, protesters wearing signs reading Free Palestine and Stop Genocide, in other words, idiots, protested around 300 of them outside the New York Stock Exchange. Massive delays, massive problems all over the country. They tried to stop everything on 416 or 415 because of yesterday's tax day, and they believe American tax dollars being used to fund the weaponry that Israel uses is what they are protesting against. Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas watched all of this nonsense and said, enough is enough. It's time for Americans to take matters into their own hands.
Feel very deeply for all those people who are trying to get to work or trying to pick up a kid. Very worried about the diversion of police resources when it needs to be stopping crime in cities like San Francisco, where firefighters are having to go there when they might have calls for fires out. I have to say, Sandra, I agree with you that you have to get to these criminals early. If something like this happened in Arkansas on a bridge there, let's just say I think there'd be a lot of very wet criminals that have been tossed overboard, not by law enforcement, but by the people whose road they're blocking. If they glued their hands to a car or the pavement, well, probably pretty painful to have their skin ripped off. But I think that's the way we'd handle in Arkansas. And I would encourage most people anywhere that get stuck behind criminals like this who are trying to block traffic to take matters in their own hands. There's only usually a few of them, and there's a lot of people being inconvenienced. It's time to put an end to this nonsense.
I completely 100,000% agree. Yes, thank you, Senator Cotton. My three-word response to these people who are blocking traffic and putting people's lives in danger, putting commerce in danger and so forth, is drive through them. I don't care. Drive through them. If somebody is walking, never mind. Let's move on.
Number two.
Speaker Mike Johnson, who I've just about had enough of, unveiled a scheme to burst a legislative logjam and unleash a four-vote flood, including a standalone vote on tens of billions of dollars in American taxpayer aid to Ukraine. The plan appears to exploit the sense of urgency in Congress for sending aid to Israel in the wake of the Iranian missile attack. So there's Republican animosity toward continuing to fund Ukraine's war against Russia, but they do want to support Israel. So here's what Johnson plans to do. He unveiled this to him last night, at a House Republican conference meeting. Hold a single vote on a rule, the product specifying which legislation heads to the House floor, as well as time and amendment considerations, which, if it's successful, would unlock four separate votes on aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, as well as a TikTok bill. The rule only needs majority support on the floor to pass. If it does, each of the four pieces of legislation would also then only need majority support. The move would enable Johnson, once an ardent foe of the continued American subsidizing of Ukraine, who has flip-flopped to adopt a fervency for more funding to Ukraine, to avoid passing yet another bill under the suspension of the rules. John Kirby, for his part, speaking for the White House, says that Biden would oppose a standalone bill for Israel.
We are opposed to a standalone bill that would just work on Israel, as we've seen proposed. We would oppose a standalone bill.
Yeah. Why? Why, you piece of utter flotsam and jetsam? Why? Why do you abandon the people of Israel unless you get your Eastern European war money? That's just the reality of the situation. Rand Paul said this yesterday. I'm sorry, said it over the weekend. I didn't play it yesterday. I wanted to. Mike Johnson is looking and sounding more and more and more like a Democrat every single day. He is. And this was the big conservative hero that Matt Gaetz forced upon us when he booted McCarthy out. I take McCarthy back in a heartbeat right now. He fought the Democrats, at least. Didn't always win, but he fought them. Mike Johnson is an absolute pushover. An absolute pushover on budget, on funding, on everything. This is comical how bad Mike Johnson is as Speaker of the House.
Number three.
Biden's inflation narrative is dead. Price growth now up to a seven-month high. According to the BLS, that's the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the latest inflation data, in March, it rose to a seven-month high, and price inflation hasn't moved nearly as been as transitory as the regime's economists have predicted it would be. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the CPI inflation rose 3.5% year-over-year during March without seasonal adjustment. It's the 37th month in a row inflation is well above the Fed's arbitrary 2% inflation target. The ongoing price increases reflect growth in food prices, services, electricity, and shelter. For example, food away from home prices were up 4.2% in March over the previous year. Gasoline up 1.3% over the period, the same period. Electricity up over 5%. I've got more on gasoline coming up in number
four.
Karine Jean-Pierre, the black and gay press secretary. Remember her? She was the diversity hire. They hired her because she was black and gay. They made a big point of that. She is celebrating that gas prices are lower than they were in 2022. Never mind the fact that gas prices remain 52% higher than they were when Biden took office. Yeah, she did this yesterday. Jean-Pierre gave her usual response to the question about combating the recent uptick in gas prices. It's gone up 20 cents over the last month, national average. She said, yeah, but prices are down from where they were before. Let me see if we have this.
Due to lower cost, but it is important that it is cheaper. It is cheaper to get gas than it was a year ago, and that's because of the of what this president has been doing.
If you ask that circus clown what exactly it is that she's talking about that the president has been doing that make gas prices cheaper than they were a year ago, if you ask her to explain how that squares with the fact that they are 52% higher than when this president took office, I think her little head would explode. I do. She said gas prices remain well below their peak back in 2022. Well, in 2022, it was over $5 a gallon. When your boss took over and did things, it was $2.38 per gallon. Like I said, circus clown.
Number five.
Tesla is planning to lay off over 14,000 people, more than 10% of its global workforce, in its first large-scale layoffs in over a year. According to an internal memo with the company, sales of the EVs have begun to stagnate amid a decline in demand. Yeah, believe it or not, shockingly, despite Joe Biden's mandate of more than 50% of all new cars by 2030 being EVs, nobody wants the EVs. The report comes after China's BYD briefly overtook Tesla as the world's top seller of battery electric vehicles. In January, Elon Musk said Tesla would soon release a cheaper $25,000 model rumored to compete with the BYD. That plan has reportedly been tabled, with Musk prioritizing the debut of a robo-taxi fleet coming up in August. Memo to Elon, memo to Joe Biden. Nobody wants your little toy electric cars that don't run in the winter.
Number six.
Israel announced it will respond to the Iran missile attack. Airlines canceled flights to the region as a result of that. Herzi Halavi, head of the Israel Defense Forces, told reporters yesterday that Iran strikes, quote, will be met with a response, without elaborating. Iran wanted to harm the strategic capabilities of the state of Israel. That is something that had not happened before, but we were prepared with the Iron Shield. However, looking ahead, we are considering our steps, and this launch of so many missiles, cruise missiles, and UAVs into the territory of the state of Israel will be met with a response. So for a lot of people who said this whole thing was coordinated and planned and now it's over, maybe not.
Number seven.
The judge overseeing President Trump's hush money trial in Manhattan yesterday, while they're selecting jurors, of which they will never, ever be able to find a true impartial jury. Not in Manhattan, where it's 90%+ left-wing progressives. But the judge gave President Trump a small victory. He said that he will not allow the prosecution to play the Access Hollywood tape featuring some of the former president's lewd comments in talking to an Access Hollywood reporter. He denied the prosecutor's request to enter the allegations of sexual assault into the evidence. Again, they're just allegations. And denying the request to bring it forward, Judge Juan Merchan described the Access Hollywood tape comments as rumors. Quote, they are very prejudicial, and at this point, given what we know today, it was just a rumor. End quote. Merchan said in court on Monday, but the judge said he would allow video footage that featured President Trump denying the allegations at various campaign rallies. So this is all part of the show. This judge is pretending to show objectivity, pretending to actually be fair and impartial in this trial of President Trump, this show trial, this ridiculous lawfare trial. So that is just another example of it.
Number eight.
Pro-abortion terrorists get lighter sentences than peaceful pro-life activists. In late January, six pro-life activists were convicted on charges of violating the Federal Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act, that's called the FACE Act, simply for blocking the entrance to an abortion facility and singing hymns and reading prayers. This is in Tennessee in 2021. The FACE Act, signed into law by Bill Clinton, punishes, quote, violent, threatening, damaging, and obstructive conduct intended to injure, intimidate, and interfere with the right to seek, obtain, or provide abortions. They did none of those things. They stood there singing and praying, and that's it. But because they did, they are now facing a maximum sentence of more than a decade in prison and 3 years of supervised release plus $260,000 in fines. Now compare that to this. Wednesday last week, Harindu Sankar Roy Chaudhary, a pro-abortion terrorist who firebombed a pro-life clinic in Wisconsin. Wisconsin Family Action Offices. Mother's Day 2022, was just sentenced to 7.5 years in prison, minus time served, plus 3 years of supervised release. For one count of malicious damage by fire or explosive of property used in interstate commerce. The judge pointed to the Western Wisconsin District Bench. Was appointed to the Western Wisconsin District Bench by Barack Obama, handed down the sentence on a much lighter charge than the acts of conspiracy and domestic terrorism that federal prosecutors wanted to charge. With good behavior and time served, the terrorist who literally firebombed those pro-life offices will serve but 5 years. Meanwhile, the prayers and the hymns being sung by the pro-life activists are going to put them in prison for over a decade. You make sense out of that.
Number nine.
And finally, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled yesterday to narrow a lower court's ruling, order, to apply only to challengers and allow Idaho to otherwise enforce its law that protects children from harmful and experimental drugs and procedures. Activists challenged only certain parts of Idaho's common sense law. The lower court stopped the state from enforcing the entire law statewide, prohibiting Idaho from protecting children under age 5 from irreversible surgeries that disfigure their bodies and stop their natural development. The Supreme Court's ruling in Labrador versus Poe allowed Idaho to protect children as the case proceeds. So that's a funky written paragraph. Bottom line is, the Supreme Court says, yes, Idaho can go forward for now with their ban on child mutilation, child castration, and the use of cross-sex hormones to destroy their body and their fertility forever. Why? Because common sense, that's why.
And there you have it.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, those are the stories that I'm interested in talking about. You can tell me where you want to go with it. What questions do you have? What comments do you have on anything in the Top 9 and 9? We'll take your calls, 216-901-0945. We are also endeavoring to get a guest on for this next hour, next half hour, rather, before Kersenow comes on at 10:10. I'll let you know if that happens, but stay here. It's Always Right Radio on AM 1420.
Answer.
All right, it is 9:33. Thanks for being with us on AM 1420. The Answer. Don't forget, phone lines are open at 216-901-0945 for reactions, responses, comments, questions about the Top 9 at 9. I'm really loving Tom Cotton, by the way. He's basically saying, don't sit there and take this anymore. Get out of your cars and move these idiots. Drag them out of the way. Now, of course, you do run the risk of somebody pushing back or fighting back. Mostly these people say they're peaceful. That's what they're there for, so they shouldn't be fighting with you. But if you drag them out of the way so you can drive your car past, Tom Cotton says, take matters into your own hands. We cannot allow this to continue. I think it's got to be worse than that. I think every single one of these individuals who even stops in the middle of a roadway should be arrested and charged with a public endangerment, because it literally is dangerous to everybody that is stuck on a bridge, stuck in a major highway, trying to get into an airport, and especially those who say, death to America, death to America, death to America, because these are all the same crowds. Newt Gingrich says, these people ought to be tried for treason.
And the fact is, I think we ought to go back and learn the lessons of the 1930s. Franklin Delano Roosevelt was faced with a Nazi effort inside the United States. They locked people up. If I believe, frankly, we should say, if you are for the victory of Iran, if you want to scream death to America, we're deporting you. If you're an American, we're going to try you for treason.
I agree. 100%. Former Speaker Newt Gingrich is spot on. We've got to stop playing games with these people and treating them with kid gloves and do what needs to be done. All right. Going to take a little bit of a shift in course here now. I want to welcome a guest. I wasn't sure if we were going to be able to reach Jessica or not. Jessica Franz is on the line with us now, because Jessica is working very, very hard in trying to reach Chairman Alex Triantafilou, the Republican Party chair in the state. Jessica is with the Ohio Republican Party State Central Committee, Senate District Number 5. And there's a meeting coming up a little bit later this month that deserves some attention here. Jessica, thanks for joining us this morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for the opportunity to join you this morning, Bob.
I appreciate the reach out. I apologize I didn't get the message until this morning, but I do want, I kind of got a little bit of a sense of it, and it's important enough for me to let you explain to everybody exactly what is going on. So why don't you tell us exactly what you're trying to achieve?
Sure. So there's a number of issues that we're going to be dealing with at our April 26th Republican State Central Committee meeting. Mm-hmm. But one of the most pressing concerns that I have as a Christian conservative on the committee, and there's at least 9 others that also share this concern with me, and there may be more, is about since the passage of Issue 1 and the abortion language being added to our Ohio Constitution, mm-hmm. There's a lot of concern about taking an oath to swearing now to the Ohio Constitution. So on, and last year, just to give you some background, our bylaws were changed at, I believe, the December meeting. And there was language added at that time to our bylaws that has never shown up in the bylaws in the history of the Ohio Republican Party. And it really posed a lot of concern, again, especially for people that are conscientious objectors or have religious reasons about taking the oath. And it came, like I said, in December, and this wasn't long after we had lost a member who had resigned from the committee, citing reasons of not being able to take an oath to the Ohio Constitution following the passage of Issue 1. And I find it really strange that it wasn't long after that that this language was added to our bylaws to obligate members to take the oath.
What does that language say, Jessica? What is that language?
It says that members of the committee shall be obligated to take the following oath upon qualifying for the committee and shall be disqualified from office if unable or unwilling to take the oath. The oath is, you know, solemnly swearing that we'll defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Ohio. It goes on from there to state that we'll obey the rules and bylaws of the Republican National Committee and the rules and bylaws of the Republican State Central and Executive Committee, and that we'll perform our duties as a member of our district and support the Ohio Republican Party and its candidates to the best of our ability. So on April 10th, I sent an email, and it was signed by myself and eight other members expressing our concern and requesting that we take a alternative oath of affirmation. And really, the only difference is that we would add one line to the existing oath, and that oath would state, you know, I do solemnly swear, we would state our name, that we'll defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Ohio. However, the line that we would request to add would be, I reserve the right to oppose the provision of the Ohio Constitution permitting abortion on demand, which contradicts my deeply held religious beliefs. If you're a person of faith, or if you're a conscientious objector, you could state that. I didn't hear any response. Again, this was on April 10th. So followed up by email yesterday. And because our agenda is due out tomorrow with all of the items. And I
Jessica, just to make sure I'm clear on this, you sent this email to whom on April 10th?
I sent this to our chairman, Alex Trantafilou, on April 10th.
Okay.
With this request.
Okay. And you have not heard from him. So this is what, the 16th? So you haven't heard from him in almost a week.
I did hear back from him on a text yesterday evening.
Okay.
And basically, he's not going to, he's not disclosing whether he's going to permit it or not. He's kind of leaving it in the hands of the committee, from my understanding. There is no effort on his part to try to make provision for those who have this issue with religious convictions. So
that was sent on April 10th to Alex Trantafilou, and then yesterday you followed up, you said, with an email?
Yeah, I followed up with an email, didn't hear anything, so I actually sent a text, and then I got a response by text.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now, so you don't, I don't know what the protocols are. So is this something that is typically up to the chairman, or you said he's referred it to the committee, to a committee?
Well,
is that typical, or is this new ground? Have we ever had anything proposals
like
ground.
This before? This is kind of unprecedented. As far as I know, this has never been an issue that's come up with members on the Republican Party before. So, you know, at this point, we're not sure how it's going to be handled at all. So it is kind of new ground here.
So let me challenge a little bit here, solely for the purposes of devil's advocacy, because I'm just trying to anticipate problems. If the Republican State Central Committee allows an oath to the Constitution to be amended to say, except for this part of it, I don't like that part of it. What kind of potential ramifications would that have, not only for other members of your party and the State Central Committee saying, yeah, well, me too, I'll pledge an oath, except I don't like this part of it or that part of it, but moreover, and again, I may be just totally off base here, but I'm picturing, let's say, something, some amendment to the Ohio Constitution that Republicans and conservatives really, really support, and then that the Democrats say, we will not be taking oaths to support a Constitution, or at least this portion of a Constitution, and the Republicans set the precedent. They didn't even support it in their own party, in their own State Central Committee. They say that we don't have to support all elements of the Constitution, only the parts that we agree with, so therefore we're not going to be taking said oaths. Is there any of that a potential problem, Jessica?
I think there's always, you know, with this, you know, that is a potential for this to be used in such a manner. I know that Ohio law provides for such instances that would allow individuals that option to affirm rather than to swear an oath in taking public office. It's also supported by our Republican National Committee, where, you know, the purpose of their rules is to encourage and allow the broadest participation of all voters in the Republican Party to assure that the party is open and accessible to all Americans. So, you know, according to our revised code, there should be an option for members who are facing issues of religious conviction or conscientious objection with taking such an oath. Now, the party, you know, they may argue again that it's in their bylaws that we are obligated, which hasn't been the case before. So that language hasn't been in there. And I think it's, like, I have to point out that I don't think it's a coincidence that this language is now here following issue one. I think there are members on the committee who saw an opportunity to make it more difficult for Christian conservatives and possibly to try to drive them out with this language that they put in. So we will see if they argue that the party is a private organization, as they have in the past, and we can do whatever we want. We can compel and obligate our members to take the oath, or if they will allow for an oath of affirmation.
So what, since this is new ground, what are you hoping that the chairman does? That he calls it for a vote of the full committee, or that he says by fiat, I mean the executive, I'm the chair, and yes, I agree, people can take this affirmation of an oath as a, you know, variation of the oath. Do you want to have open meetings about it, discussion, debate? How do you want to proceed?
I think out of courtesy and respect, we wanted to let the chairman know what we were thinking and what our plans were, but this isn't something really that, and I'm speaking for myself here, that I'm asking for permission. You know, I have to be obedient to God. That's who I answer to. And I understand that not everyone has the same convictions. But when you do have a conviction like this, it's important that you have the opportunity to not have to be compelled to do something that is you're diametrically opposed to your faith.
Yeah, so, well, I agree. I'm sorry. Yeah. Please continue. I thought you were done. Go ahead.
No, and so I will, you know, I'm not, like I said, I'm not really asking for permission. It was a courtesy. And so for those of us who want to move forward with this, we will be taking the oath that is in our bylaws, but we will be adding the line about not being supportive of abortion on demand.
So not asking permission, I understand, and I understand your intention, and this was a courtesy offer, and I get it. But I guess then the question becomes, what happens if there's a pushback? What if there is a, committee member Franz, that's not the oath. We need you to recite the oath as it's written. I mean, what if they say you can't do that?
Yeah, and that is very possible that we would receive pushback. They have also added to the bylaws that members of the committee who have been determined to have violated their oath in their conduct or engage in behavior detrimental to the goals of the Ohio Republican Party, which they don't define what that is, can be expelled from the committee by a 2/3 vote. So if they so choose not to honor the different oaths that we have submitted with the extra lines. Again, I want to just point out that's the only difference in the oath there is that we say we're not supporting abortion. Then, you know, it is possible that the chairman or members of the committee could try to push a vote to expel those members from the party with a 2/3 vote.
And if they tried to expel you, Jessica Franz, mm-hmm. if you just turn the radio on, by the way, Jessica Franz is with the ORP State Central Committee. She represents Senate District 5. If they say, we heard your oath, we heard your affirmation and the line that you changed, and you need to fix that or you're gone or we're going to have a vote in tooth, would you accept?
Well, again, I didn't. I do want to just clarify, I didn't change anything. It's just an added sentence.
Yeah, I know. So, even when you add something, it is amended, right? I mean, it's considered
sure,
to be amended.
That is correct.
So, if you recite the amended version of the oath, and you know that it's going to lead to a vote, and 2/3 of your colleagues could evict you from this, would you accept that?
At the end of the day, as I said before, I have to stand before God and give an account. If God is asking me to do something, then I have to be obedient to that first and foremost and let the chips fall where they may.
I respect that. So I respect that 100%. I'm so sickened, Jessica, that we're in this position, that we have to sit here and decide whether or not we will recite an oath to a document that, you know, that essentially allows the murder in the view of I don't know, people who have a brain. I'm sorry, I'm being a little bit callous here, but with the murder of preborn babies is murder still, and they're asking you to recite an oath, and anybody coming forward, anybody who's running for a statewide office or even a legislative office, they're asking them to pledge an oath to support that, to support said murder of babies. I don't understand how we got here.
And there have been those that have argued, well, just take the oath, you don't have to mean it. But for some people, and I would be included in this group, an oath isn't just words. And an oath is something that you take and you do mean. And if you don't mean it, then you shouldn't be taking it. And so for me to pledge to uphold the part of the Constitution that now allows the unrestricted, unlimited murder of the innocent preborn, to me, that is taking the knee to Baal. A false god. I'm not going to do that. And I can't do that. I couldn't stand before God and do that. And again, it's a very personal decision, so I'm not judging others on the committee who may feel differently, but I am asking for those members to respect the different views that people now have with this issue and to honor that, you know, I can't pledge or swear to that. Uphold that.
Yeah, well, you know, what's really important to note here, too, is the last four words of the oath, which are, so help me God. So when they say you can say it, just take the oath, but don't mean it. If you don't mean it, while then saying, so help me God, you are essentially lying to God. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, that's just to
make me accursed. So I'm not interested in putting myself under a curse.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it's like when somebody asks you, do you really mean something, you know, and you just say kind of haphazardly, swear to God, that's what happened, swear to God, that's the truth. They add that emphasis as if to say, look, if I'm lying, now God will strike me down or God will judge me for that. I swear to God, this is the truth. People add that all the time. Well, that's at the end of the oath. So you can't just say, so help me God, but in your heart, no, I don't really mean that, by the way. Because you are putting yourself in a bad position. Yeah, well, you know, if you are a person of faith. So, well, Jessica, I'm so sad. And you know what? Let me ask one last question of you here. And I know this isn't necessarily your purview, but do you have any idea where things are with respect to the challenge of that amendment that passed, either from a legislative standpoint, anything that's going on in the assembly to kind of weaken or amend the meaning of that which was passed, because they left it with, you know, so much ambiguity, it was so muddy. And then secondly, I was kind of hoping that there would be an activist organization that would immediately start collecting signatures to change that amendment, to repeal that amendment from the Constitution. Do you know anything that's going on with respect to that?
I have not heard anything in recent news with those efforts. Mm. So, and I would love to, I would love to be able to tell you that I have. And it is definitely, you know, I hear people say it's something that we need to address, but I haven't seen any action. So if there is action in this area, not action that I'm aware of. So,
well,
I'm a person that would advocate to the GA and have, and we'll continue to do so, that we need to give rights to the preborn. We need to stop, you know, we start giving them rights, then the issue one, you know, that's not going to stand, because now we're looking at them as they truly are, made in the image of God, his creation, with rights that he's given them, and we need to honor those rights. So that doesn't take away the right of someone to get an abortion, but now the state would honor them as human beings, and there are consequences. They can't sell the fetal remains to Planned Parenthood. They can't, and of course, this is, we could talk about this for another hour, so I don't want to get too far down down this road, but there's a lot of different angles that we could be looking at to tackle this right now. And that's just one.
Well, Jessica, I'm so glad you brought this to our attention. I will be very interested to see how this works out on April 26th. You did say you had seven or eight other people who co-signed the letter with you, right? So you do have some support.
That is correct, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, hopefully. And how many members of the State Central Committee are there?
There are 66.
66 members. Oh, that's right. Two for each district. So 66 members, and only eight, though, have at least co-signed this. Have you inquired with others, and these are the only eight who said yes, put my name on this, or have you just only talked to a handful?
Yeah, I have not had the opportunity to put this out in front of the entire committee. So that is something that we could do. We're talking about other issues, hopefully, at the meeting, as well, that we also need to get in front of the entire committee, certain bylaw amendments, disaffiliation of Speaker Stevens. I'm still trying to get that on the agenda, and it's unclear as to whether that request will be honored as well. So
gotcha.
The 26th is going to be a very busy day.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it is. It sure sounds like it is. And you've got a very, very important agenda here. And it's one that I completely support and respect. I mean, good for you for not wanting to say that we take an oath to a constitution that literally supports and legalizes, infanticide, which is what this is. And I will not support that. So I'm thankful that you brought it up. Thank you for reaching out. I will ask any of our listeners right now to maybe reach out to your representation and see what you can do to maybe generate some support so that they can at least add in this amended line. This affirmation, line of affirmation that Jessica has just detailed here, so that maybe people can move forward with doing their work without also violating their own consciences. Jessica Franz, thank you for what you brought up here. I appreciate it, and the very best of luck. Yeah, keep me posted, okay? Let me know how it goes, all right?
Thanks, Bob. We'll do.
All the best to you. Thank you. All right, that's Jessica Franz, Senate District 5 representative of the Ohio State Central Committee. How about Republican State Central Committee? So how about that? All right, 216-901-0945 is the number. Ah, swallow that. Don't even use that yet, because we're going right to Kirsten now after the top of the hour. But we'll save that number for later when we can take your phone calls. Are you going to Kent with us tonight? Are you? If you're not planning to go to Kent State, with us tonight. Let me rephrase. If you are planning to go to Kent State with us tonight, make sure you have your ticket. I have the link to get your tickets. Again, they're online. You just get a QR code for your phone. And it's on my Facebook page, on my Always Right Radio Facebook page. So if you go to Facebook and look for Always Right Radio, my page will come up and you will see a link. In fact, I've refreshed it. The top post on that page right now just says in big red square, see you at 4:30 Tuesday afternoon in Kent. And then the first comment under that is the link in which you can get your tickets so that you can make sure that you can get in with us if indeed they allow us in. We're going to find out. So the event starts at 6 tonight, but we're going to get there early in the hopes of finding our way inside so that we can indeed show some support for a brave young man who is supporting our constitutional rights. That's Kyle Rittenhouse. All right, time out here for the top of the hour. Kirsten now next. It's Always Right Radio on AM 1420.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420. The Answer. Is your host. Bob France.
All right, hour number two is underway, 6 minutes past 10 o'clock. Thank you so much for being with us on this Tuesday. It's the 16th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. I want to remind you once again about what's going on today. I have had a lot of people expressing a lot of interest in this over the course of the last month or so since we found out that Kyle Rittenhouse would be speaking at Kent State University on April 16th. So that date is here. If you have not yet gotten your ticket, and again, I have no idea. I'm just throwing this out there. I have no idea how they will decide who gets to get in. It's a smaller venue. It's got 400 seats, I guess. And there's probably going to be 400, you know, protesters alone, much less those of us who are going to be there to support Kyle Rittenhouse. So I don't know how they're going to decide who gets in. You have to have a ticket, though, a QR code on your phone to get in. And I put that link on my webpage, or not my webpage, on my Facebook page, Always Right Radio Facebook page. The first comment under the posting that I made is a link. It says Kyle Rittenhouse at Kent State University, and it's an events a registration page where you can get your little QR code ticket and be there. So we're going to get there early, around 4:30 or so. The event is supposed to start at 6. Some people, I'm told from messages I'm getting, are going to go there even earlier. They're going to leave at, you know, 3 o'clock or so, get there 3:30, 4 o'clock even, and maybe hold some space. But we're all going to get together. There's a parking lot right across from the front of the Kiva Center or Student Union or whatever it's called. And we're going to meet there, like I said. So we're going to go there. We are going to peacefully and patriotically show our support for Kyle Rittenhouse, his First Amendment rights, his Second Amendment rights, and all of ours at the same time. They can try to boo him. They can try to shout him down. They can try to run him out of the venue. We will be there to respond peacefully and patriotically. So if you want to be a part of that, like I said, make sure you have your ticket code, if you will. Download it on your phone. Just go to my Facebook page at Always Right Radio. All right, since it is a Tuesday, you know what that means. It's another kind of a day. Tuesday is a cursing out day. So, yeah. There he is, Peter Kersenow. We almost didn't have Kersenow today, so let's test the pipes there, Peter Kersenow. How you feeling, bud?
You know, what the heck? It's not like I'm face down in a rice paddy in Vietnam, so this is not... I just have a little bit of... I don't know what the problem is. I had a hard time speaking this morning. My throat and chest are all seized up, but, you know, nothing you can't power through.
Well, I'm glad to hear you doing it. Pete texted me about an hour before showtime, or half an hour, whatever it was, saying he can't speak very well. He's got a whisper voice today. He's got a little bit of a throat problem. He was going to have to miss the show. Okay, I'm sitting here planning on what we're going to do in Pete's absence, and then he messaged me about 15 minutes before showtime saying, what the hell, let's try it. All right, so Kirsten, I was in. We'll do the best we can. If, by the way, Pete, you do start to feel you know, bad and you need to cut out, just let me know, and it's no big deal.
Nah, it's not going to happen. You know, Bob, you played football. If you do that, your coach beats you up.
Fair enough, fair enough. All right, so Peter Kersenow, let's dive right into some of this. This is a breaking story. It literally just came across. Had you followed the story of the NPR editor, Yuri?
Yeah.
Berliner.
I did. Yeah, I read his entire piece, and I read part of the response, or a response to it, from the new, I think it's president or
CEO or whatever she is. Yeah, the new leader of NPR. Yeah. Well, one of the actions, in addition to criticizing him as she did, is to suspend him. He is now suspended for 5 days without pay. For daring to publicize the truth, for telling everybody that it was very easy to check the voter registration and that there are 87 registered Democrats and zero registered Republicans. Peter, it's not possible to hire, you know, that disparity of staff accidentally. I mean, if you are truly just looking for qualified people to fill these positions in all of the different spots at NPR, it would be impossible that it would be just coincidence that everybody happens to be a left-wing Democrat. This had to be intentional, in addition to, of course, all of their editorial decision-making that led to his expose, and now they go ahead and suspend him. You are famous for saying the Democrats and the media, but I repeat myself, and you weren't kidding, especially when it comes to taxpayer-funded NPR.
This is where, you know, there's a lot to say on this. I'll just simply say a couple things. Number one, Mike Johnson has the gavel and the power to force a vote on defunding NPR. NPR first came into existence along with National Public or the WVIZ and other stations because allegedly there wasn't alternate viewpoints and they wanted to present a information that wasn't controlled by the big three networks at the time. It is 100% a Democrat-run operation, not just Democrat. It's progressive. Now, they talk in whispery voices as if they're very erudite and very considered and very even-handed, but that's a bunch of bull, and we all know it. So why are we, that is, half of America that is being demonized by these clowns, paying our tax dollars to fund them? If they want to do it on their own dime, not mine. And Mike Johnson and others, at least they should make the attempt. They will not be able to get it passed because we don't have enough votes, and we've got we've got something in the White House that is not very isn't sentient. But nonetheless, at least do it because the effort sometimes is important. You have to have shots across the bow. You have to give your constituents some type of encouragement that you need to continue to fight this. So the next time we do have power to do this, we will defund them. But not a surprise at all. If you watch NPR, which I do from time to time because, it's like opposition research. You want to know what they're up to. Sometimes they telegraph what they're going to do next, or you're going to hear the explanations. It's nice to know what the Democratic talking points are, and you won't find them in too many better places than NPR, along with MSNBC, CNN, ABC, and the major media in general. But NPR is really kind of the locus for how the so-called intelligentsia of the left wing is implementing their policy prescriptions or wants to implement their policy prescriptions. Not a surprise, Bob, but it's nonetheless good in clarifying, and I think that everyone should pay a little bit of attention to it and then move on and say, yeah, it's just what I thought it was.
Well, you know what's interesting to me is when I saw what Yuri Berliner had said and written, I kind of thought, because it happened near the same time that Chris Quinn of The Plain Dealer did his We Hate Trump and We're Not Ashamed to Say It, and we are not going to pretend to be a news organization at the Cleveland Plain Dealer. We're not going to pretend to have an objective analysis of the news for our readers. We are going to tell you that Trump is an awful human being and he is Hitler-esque and his supporters are Hitlerian as well. Those things happened at the same time, and I thought, wow, the brazenness of left-wing media now just coming out to say, yeah, we're left-wing media, and we don't care who says so. This latest development here is they don't want to say it that way, at least at NPR, maybe because of what you said at the outset, that their funding is controlled by the government. And a speaker, maybe not this particular speaker, I am less than impressed with Mike Johnson, but that the legislature could very well put their funding in jeopardy.
Yeah, and I think, it's on the list of conservative priorities. It's probably 7,300. But nonetheless, it is something that I think should be striven toward. And I would just say, and I know some of your listeners have the bad judgment of listening to what I have to say, and some of them do call their representatives. They've told me they have and have written letters. This is one of those things when you have some free time and not much else to do. It's not the highest priority, as I said, but write a letter to your representative, whoever it may be, and let them know that you're done with funding NPR. It's not even a drop in the bucket of the ridiculous profligate spending that we have, but I do think it's important to make sure that we don't have a propaganda arm, operating on our tax dollars. And, it's when you listen to what NPR does, they are more subtle than many. And from that perspective, they're a little bit more pernicious. So the fact that it's called National Public Radio instead of Democratic or Progressive Public Radio in and of itself is a lie. So I think it's one of those battles that if you've got some time, make sure that you let your representatives know this is one of the things you need to zero out, and it's an easy thing to do.
Yeah, completely agree. So, Pete, since you brought up, the speaker, I'm going to go a little bit off script here. Not that we script our show, but just to follow this briefly, I'm so terribly, terribly disappointed with, almost everything that I have seen since they replaced Kevin McCarthy with Mike Johnson. And that is not to say that I was a massive Kevin McCarthy fan. I was not. But he fought a hell of a lot harder than I have seen Mike Johnson fight in the time since he's had the gavel. And I'm talking about budget issues, spending issues. I'm talking about completely flipping on his Ukraine position. This is a guy who was a huge foe of sending more of our, of billions of our dollars, tens or hundreds of billions of more dollars to Ukraine when we are $34.5 trillion in debt. And now he is completely flip-flopped, and he wants to do everything he can, include using a bit of a scheme to unleash a four-vote flood of standalone bills so that Ukraine can get theirs as well. I don't know what to make of this guy, Peter. I feel, you know what Rand Paul said yesterday, or excuse me, on Sunday? He said, this guy, it's hard to tell the difference between Mike Johnson and a Democrat. And this was supposed to be the conservative answer to the, more moderate Rhino McCarthy problem.
Yeah. This is going to make for boring radio, Bob, because I'm going to agree with you again. Initially, I was holding out hope for Mike Johnson. I wanted to think, based on the reports that we got, that he was going to be a conservative and he was going to be an effective conservative. We understand we only have a slight majority in the House, so you've got to be herding cats very, very well to make sure that we get some of our policy prescriptions at least on the floor. And I also was motivated by the fact that I thought we have some really tactically stupid Republicans, such as Marjorie Taylor Greene, with whom I probably agree on 99.9% of substantive issues. I doubt there's any daylight in terms of policy prescriptions with respect to her and me, but her tactics are that of a third grader, and it hurts the Republican Party. But now I'm like, my goodness, we're not getting anywhere. We're hurting the party, more importantly, the country. And I think we need, going back to, what you said with respect to Kevin McCarthy, I was not necessarily a big Kevin McCarthy fan, but Kevin McCarthy, it seems to me, was shrewder, read his constituency better, and by that I mean the Republicans in the House, and so was probably a little bit better overall in terms of moving the agenda forward. But, and again, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, meaning Johnson, that he's got the slimmest of majorities. He's got a Senate that's Democratic-controlled and a White House that's Democratic-controlled. But that said, there's a lot someone like him can do, and I don't think he's being as shrewd or as conservative as I had hoped. So, again, this is another one of those things where I urge your listeners to call in and tell Johnson to get a brain and backbone.
Yeah,
in other words, go see the wizard.
Yeah, especially the backbone part. He's certainly not a dumb guy. I think he's much more malleable in his positions than it would appear maybe some of his supporters thought. And I think he is also a little bit more easily manipulated because he has not been on the job very long, and he has flipped around on several things. He is becoming quite, a flip-flopper. And I know that's an overused political term, but it's real in this case. And by the way, here was the clip I mentioned about Rand.
Absolutely not. Americans shouldn't be spied on by their own government. The Fourth Amendment was put in by our founding fathers to protect us. FISA doesn't obey the Fourth Amendment. And so Speaker Johnson was incredibly wrong. He broke the tie. He voted with the Democrats. Here we have the leader of the Republicans in the House votes with the Democrats against a warrant requirement. We also have Speaker Johnson voting for the spending package, once again, with a majority of the Democrats. As I see it now, I'm not sure there's a difference between Mike Johnson being in charge and the Democrats being in charge.
I concur with Rand Paul, Peter, and since I played that for you, you can respond to that specifically as well. But that'll launch us into the next part of this, which is that FISA reauthorization, that FISA Section 702 that allows the government to spy on. It's supposed to be just for foreigners and foreign lands, but it has been used to monitor Americans' communications without a warrant. And it was 212 to 211. And Mike Johnson cast the vote that put it into a tie rather than authorizing the amendment that said you must have a warrant. He cast a vote that made it a tie that killed it. And so now this can be done without a warrant. And I'm trying to figure out who is Mike Johnson. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think he's a swamp creature, which he may not have come in as a swamp creature, but the swamp has a way of turning you into one. There's so many things to say to unpack about that. Let me just make a couple of very discreet points. One is with respect to FISA. Back when it was first authorized, shortly after, in the postscript to 9/11, a lot of us were alarmed. We needed more authorities to be able to protect the country. But the last 20 years have shown vividly that we have a, for lack of a better term, it's been derided, but it's, I think, as accurate as you get, and encapsulates the description of what the deep state, the administrative state, has become. We've seen what the FBI and the CIA have done. I don't trust them at all. And I think your listeners don't trust them. I think the majority of Americans don't trust them. They've become partisan. They've become out of control in some respects. Again, the usual caveat about rank and file and all those folks. But look, these rank and file guys, yeah, I understand they want to preserve their jobs, but they're going along with it. Some of them are going along with it. So with respect to that, I've got serious issues where in the past, you know, maybe 15 years ago, I would not have had serious issues with it. I do now, and I think a lot of folks, I want to apologize to those folks who saw this right from the beginning, like a Rand Paul, who was a stalwart on opposing these broad authorities given to the federal government, ostensibly to protect us against foreign terrorists, and it's been weaponized against us. And think about if the Democrats had an even broader mandate with respect to the Senate and the House. Right now they don't. And the way that could be abused and would be abused. The deep state, I've said this a million times, and I've said this on your show, that the only piece of advice I ever gave Donald Trump was that the administrative state is not your friend. It was before he took office that I said that, and I gave him the stats on this. I don't have them right in front of me, but they were overwhelming. The percentage of individuals within the various departments of government that voted for Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. The Defense Department was the lowest percentage that had voted for Hillary Clinton, and still, I think it was 88% of Defense Department employees voted for Hillary Clinton. Justice Department was something like 98%. It's a uniparty, and we've seen how they've gone after Trump and making up things just really twisting the law into pretzels that we've never seen before. This is what that we're up against, and do you want to give them any more authority? Yes, we have to protect the country, but and I've looked at the FISA bill. There are several pockets of potential abuse, and I won't go into all of them at this particular time. It may be a subject. It'll put your listeners to sleep, first of all, but we can go into it at some other point. You know, you get sometimes. I deal with facts all the time. I lead a very boring life, concrete. I can't, you know, except for when I write my novels. It's the only time I get involved in fantasy and imagination. But right now, I think if you've got a couple of brain cells working, you have to have a portion of your brain that's a bit paranoid and wondering what the heck is going on here. And understand this, what we do know is there are a lot of folks within our government who hate the United States of America, and more importantly, hate the people within the United States of America. That is not too extremist statement to make. I've met them. You've seen them. There's no doubt about that. So do you want to, you know, necessarily give these kinds of broad authorities to people who have a track record of wielding them improperly against their fellow citizens, and also have a track record of not being very good at protecting the American citizens against threats? Let me strike that. Because we get hit by multiple threats, most of which we don't hear about, and there are very good people making sure that we're being saved from threats. But overarching, the folks at the top, Alejandro Mayorkas, the head of Department of Homeland Security, the worst person in the world for that, he is harming the ability of the United States palpably to protect its citizens. We don't want these kinds of individuals to have those broad authorities. So, long-winded explanation, Bob, to say, I'm with Rand Paul on many of these things, especially when it comes to civil libertarianism. I'm not necessarily libertarian, but these are the kind of protections that we need, and our founding fathers had enshrined into the Constitution, which is being used as a piece of tissue paper.
That's very well said, Peter Kersenow. And Pete, you sound great, by the way. For somebody who woke up not able to talk, you're doing just great, and I'm glad of that, because we have a lot more to talk about. You mentioned the word Trump trial. You said what they're doing to Donald Trump, so I want to talk next segment about the trial as it's going so far. Obviously, jury selection is in place. I'm going to talk about whether or not there's even a remote possibility of a fair and impartial jury being seated in that trial, and also what the judge is doing in that case. Death to America chants and protests are breaking out all over the country right now, and apparently the left is A-okay with that. Donald Trump has mean tweets, and we can't stand it, but death to America, all good. What can be done about this? I want to talk about that, and then also, obviously, about what we should do vis-a-vis Israel being struck by Iran. How much should America involve themselves in this, knowing that Iran, Russia, and China are all in an alliance with one another? So we'll get all of those thoughts from Peter Kersenow. Stay right here on Always Right Radio, AM 1420, The Answer.
The Answer.
All right, 10:33. Thanks for being with us once again on Always Right Radio, AM 1420, The Answer. We are privileged to have Peter Kirsenow with us for another 20 minutes or so, fighting through the throat pain or discomfort that he might have today. Peter is, of course, we didn't do the traditional introduction. I think everybody knows you by now. But he's a member of the United States Commission on Civil Rights. He's a best-selling author. He is a columnist. He is a sometimes law professor and an all-the-time attorney. Joining us on AM 1420, The Answer. Okay. So, Pete, as noted, there are several other things to get to. These protests are becoming more and more, I don't want to say violent. They're not really violent, but they're more aggressive as they are burning American flags now. Most of these are pro-Palestinian protests and anti-Israel. They're burning American flags. They are chanting death to America in addition to death to Israel. They're blocking more and more traffic yesterday all across the country at O'Hare, the busiest airport in the world, in San Francisco. The Golden Gate Bridge was basically brought to a standstill in New York City, more of the same. So they're doing so many different things to try to draw attention to their cause. I do not think they're helping themselves, but the question remains, what can be done? I want to give you two clips here before you respond. This is Senator Tom Cotton saying that Americans should not stand for this, and we're going to have to do what we're going to have to do.
Well, I feel very deeply for all those people who are trying to get to work or trying to pick up a kid. Very worried about the diversion of police resources when it needs to be stopping crime in cities like San Francisco, where firefighters are having to go there when they might have calls for fires out. I have to say, Sandra, I agree with you that you have to get to these criminals early. If something like this happened in Arkansas on a bridge there, let's just say I think there'd be a lot of very wet criminals that have been tossed overboard, not by law enforcement, but by the people whose road they're blocking. If they glued their hands to a car or the pavement, well, probably pretty painful to have their skin ripped off, but I think that's the way we'd handle it in Arkansas, and I would encourage most people anywhere that get stuck behind criminals like this who are trying to block traffic to take matters in their own hands. There's only usually a few of them, and there's a lot of people being inconvenienced. It's time to put an end to this nonsense.
That's part one. Take matters into your own hands, says Senator Tom Cotton. Peter, I want to get your response to that on a legal level as well as just a personal level. And then this is part two about the Death to America chanters.
And the fact is, I think we ought to go back and learn the lessons of the 1930s. Franklin Delano Roosevelt was faced with a Nazi effort inside the United States. They locked people up. If I believe, frankly, we should say, if you are for the victory of Iran, if you want to scream death to America, we're deporting you. If you're an American, we're going to try you for treason. You can't get up and say death to America as an American citizen. And it's time that we were prepared to defend the survival of the United States.
So former Speaker Newt Gingrich says, try them for treason, charge them for their death to America chants, because they are obviously pro America's enemies like Iran. Peter, take both of those. What do you think?
Well, you know, you may have, look, I think you know, and your audience knows now by Bob, that emotionally I agree with Gingrich. I would like nothing better than to, I would like to deport anybody who's not a citizen. If they say something like that, death to America, and they're not a citizen, deport them immediately. No ifs, ands, or buts. Just get them out of America. If they say death to America, they shouldn't be here. Go wherever you think it's better. Okay, but if they're American citizens, they've got a First Amendment right, provided that they don't exhort people to violence to achieve the end of death to America. So as despicable as that is, level public opprobrium against them. The minute they spit on the sidewalk, arrest them, put them in jail. Okay, but you can't go around and violate the law. That's not what we do. I agree with Cotton also. I think these folks, these are despicable individuals who utilize the freedoms provided by the United States of America. If you think the United States is so bad, again, I'll go back to 50 years ago during the Vietnam War, there was something that the so-called sophisticated left derided, and that is there were a number of people, hard hats mainly, who used to march and say, America, love it or leave it. I was a little kid at the time, and I agreed wholeheartedly with them. America, love it or leave it. Yeah, you've got the right to say all kinds of things about America in denigration of the United States, federal citizens. I don't have the obligation, however, to recognize that, to respect you at all. I have an obligation not to hit you, as much as I would like to, I have an obligation to make sure that your rights are protected, even though I'd like to strip you of those rights. But I have a First Amendment right, which I can use much more vociferously and effectively than most of these morons, and I would exhort everybody to do just that. Tom Cotton's got it right. Newt Gingrich has got it right. Lighting a flag on fire and disrupting traffic, as we saw yesterday and the day before yesterday.
The traffic is the worst part.
Yeah, put those bozos in jail. I've got to get to work. These folks have got to get to work. They're involved in American commerce. They're exercising their rights as an American, and you're disrupting their ability to perform their obligations. You're blockading streets and bridges, and you have the time to do so, meaning that you have money from somewhere, whether it's their parents or from some type of subsidy that we taxpayers are providing. My goodness, we shouldn't be countenancing this. We shouldn't be rolling over or turning the other cheek. We have to teach these little kids precisely what it means to be an adult. I heard your intro with respect to Kyle Rittenhouse. You know, it's the old thing about F around and find out.
Yes.
You know, people need to find out a lot more. I'm willing to do so, and I've been, I won't go into a whole lot of detail, I've been involved in a situation where I let somebody find out what's going on. There's nothing more exhilarating and rewarding than seeing a little punk understand that, you know what, it's time to grow up. Now, I'm not exhorting anyone toward violence. I'm saying that, you know, exercise your First Amendment rights. I will admit that I exercised more than my First Amendment rights in the particular instance in which I just referenced, and I'm not encouraging people to do that, but I'm not going to cry in my beer if every once in a while one of these little Twinkies gets a scratch or gets a little bruise on their noggin because they've acted stupidly and have been setting flags on fire, obstructing people doing their jobs, getting to work, and so on and so forth. So I wish we had, other than a walking, talking mannequin in the White House, somebody who could exercise leadership and say to these folks, enough is enough. You don't disrupt your fellow Americans like this. If you want to voice your concerns with respect to any issue, you've got the public square in which to do so, but you have to do so peacefully and patriotically, as Trump told the people on January 6th. But no, these folks are permitted to do anything, cause millions of dollars, or back during the George Floyd riots, billions in damage. And what do we have? We have a vice presidential candidate that exhorts them to do more and threatens that there will do more. But that's perfectly okay. That's perfectly okay. No, let's draw a line in the sand, folks. Let's act as Americans. Let's teach these guys patriotically and peacefully what it means to be an American, and don't countenance this crap.
Yeah, and peacefully and patriotically, you know, those are those famous words, you know, that they say Trump didn't say, you know, when it came to January 6th. But it is, and that's what we have to do. I am so tired, Peter, of watching all of these things happen and then just saying, here's my only response, social media post. Oh, boy, that's terrible that they did this. We have to show that there is a pushback, a peaceful, patriotic pushback at every event, whether it's this Kyle Rittenhouse thing tonight, which we're going to go to, and I have a ton of people that are messaging me by the hour telling me that we're going to go. Because the students there, the protesters, are going to stage a walkout. They're going to try to fill the place up and then walk out and leave them with an empty auditorium. Little do they know that we are going to fill that place. But at any rate, we need to have a show of support and a show of force, Pete. We need to push back against. And as I mentioned in your commentary about the traffic being worse even than the American flag burning, the American flag is symbolic. Traffic literally impacts, I mean, so many more people than just the people in their cars. First of all, if there are emergency vehicles, it goes without saying that they cannot get through. That's extraordinarily important. People who are, you know, being blocked from getting to the airport are going to miss flights. You know, multi-million dollar deals could be impacted by this. People's jobs, production, performance, all of these different things are impacted by this, and they don't seem to care. And the worst, the most that we do about it is go on radio programs like mine and complain, or go on social media and complain. We need to go out there and be active. And I think Tom Cotton, even though it's a little risky, it seems like, to go and grab these people and drag them out of the way, is right. We just can't sit here and play their games, Pete.
Ken's right, and I don't think it's that risky. I'm not exhorting people to do that. Again, I'm not exhorting
understood.
People.
Understood, yeah.
I'll give you a couple examples. I still remember, and this has nothing to do with this situation, but when I was in college, there were a number of us on the football team who needed to get to practice, and there were some there were a lot of people who were blocking the way because of, I don't even remember what the nature of the protest was. Can't remember, but we had to get to practice. Not the most important thing in the world, but nonetheless, if you're a college football player, you understand if the coach says you got to be at practice at 3, you better be that 3. Well, we exercised some discretion and removed these individuals. It never happened again, and I will tell you that those individuals gave us wide berth whenever they encountered us on campus again. I'm not bragging about that. I'm simply saying that sometimes action is more effective than words, and I'm not exhorting, again, I'll repeat it one more time, I'm not exhorting violence, but the little Twinkies that are doing this have to understand there are consequences, whether it be arrest by police officers and put through the process. I don't know if you saw, it's now a viral videotape of a woman at the council meeting, I believe it was in Oakland, California, telling the council that, you know, she was talking about Hamas and everything. She's a pro-Hamas person and saying that the council was just a bunch of awful people because they didn't support Hamas, and said, we will, you know, we will come to your house and we will murder you. And she said it with impunity, you know, like all these little Twinkies do. Well, guess what happened? She got arrested, and you look at the video of it. She's crying and bawling and stuff, and she's so fearful that she got arrested, she can't figure out why it happened. We need 5,000 examples just like that, because it seems that law-abiding citizens, those who have fought for the country, those who pay their taxes, those who make sure that their lawns are mowed, are the ones who are being portrayed as the villains. We're the secondary citizens, and we've elevated all these clowns by virtue of the Democratic Party and the progressives, and their fealty toward criminals and the dregs of society. And we are second-class citizens now. And I would say, you know, refuse to do so. Don't participate in that. You know, look what they're doing, and I'm going all over the map here, but yeah, if they can do it to Donald Trump, they can do it to all of us, and we must resist even the slightest incursion into our rights. We're the ones paying taxes. We're the ones who fought the wars. We're the ones keeping the peace. We're the ones that make sure that these little Twinkies have the wherewithal to even protest the United States of America and burn the flag.
Peter Kersenow is our guest, and we're talking about a whole host of things. I'm all over the place, too, Pete. There's so many different things to get here. And since you just mentioned if they can do this to Trump, they can do it to all of us, and you are, of course, correct. This is the first of the lawfare trials against him. There's obviously the civil case we've been watching in which Letitia James is literally prosecuting the most ridiculous thing that I think I've ever seen. This one might be a close second, though. This is a criminal trial in which President Trump is being accused of apparently shuffling paperwork the wrong way. And these are misdemeanor charges that, of course, you know what's worst about it, Peter, is Alvin Bragg, Fat Alvin, the prosecutor in Manhattan, literally just, Alvin Bragg has spent his
time. You have to laugh at stuff like that. You really do. If you can't laugh at that, you don't have a sense of humor. He, Letitia James, Fannie Wilson, they're three of the most absurd people in America today, and yet they are the avatars for the Democratic Party. Amazing.
Yes. How about that? Yeah. Well, anyway, this guy has spent his entire career as a prosecutor thus far taking people who have committed felonies and letting them off with misdemeanors so they don't have to go to jail, because equity, when it comes to Donald Trump, these are misdemeanor charges that he has bootstrapped to felonies to try to get him in, put him in prison for 4 years. It is very clearly not about anything to do other than stopping him from becoming president of the United States. So, Peter, he's in Manhattan. We've talked about this before, but we have to hit it now because it's happening. They're picking jurors from a population of people that are 90 to 95% left wing Democrats. How can they possibly pick a fair and impartial jury so that he can be judged by said fair and impartial jury of his peers when there are none in that particular location?
Well, we can't. It's not going to happen. And understand that. Yes, you'll be able to impanel a jury. They will be the least rabid opponents of Donald Trump. But understand, as I think everybody does, if you've watched the reports, or if you've just spent 15 seconds in Manhattan, Manhattan is 95% rabid left-wing Democrat. They hate Donald Trump with a passion. And they're going to do everything they can to make sure that Donald Trump gets convicted. That's unfortunate to say. We're supposed to mouth these platitudes about how everyone is entitled to and will receive a fair and impartial trial, but that's not going to happen in this particular case. This whole thing has been engineered, meaning finding the venue, finding the, you know, all of those things have been engineered to enhance the prospect of getting a conviction of Donald Trump for spitting on the sidewalk or some other kind of thing. anything they can get them on. It is true. Simply because it's being said by a political candidate doesn't mean it's not true. It is true that this is lawfare for the purpose of election interference. Everyone knows that. Everyone understands that, despite the fact that Joe Scarborough and other people with room temperature IQs are trying to maintain that it's not. I mean, the fact that you can see this, and it's, I don't want to overstate the issue. I've said before in other forums that, you know, this is the kind of stuff, if you talk to, you know, Cambodian or Vietnamese boat people or people who've come here from Eastern Europe of a certain age from behind the Iron Curtain, they say, you know, you don't want to go down this path. We've seen this movie before. That's, you know, this is nowhere near what it was like in the old Soviet Union or anything else like that. But this is the incipiency of things like that. You can't allow, you have to extinguish this at the first flowering or flaming of this. And what we're seeing here, they talk about Donald Trump being, you know, this demagogue or being a threat to democracy. Everything they're doing is a threat to democracy. When you jerry-rig a system like this, so the leading presidential candidate, and he's the leading presidential candidate, the husk in the White House is behind him. When you do things such as trying to keep him off the ballot, trying to convict him or take up his time so he can campaign, do things like that.
That's right.
That is totalitarianism light. That's not what happened in the Soviet Union, but it's the kind of things that will lead us toward further acceptance of the kind of totalitarianism that was endemic in the Soviet Union. And again, I know people, I have relatives who escaped from the Soviet Union. So I know of which I speak. I'm not trying to exaggerate it. But all those folks who've come from totalitarian regimes will tell you, you don't want to do this. And it's those folks who are constantly talking about Donald Trump being a threat to democracy, who are the biggest threats to democracy themselves, but they can't be introspective. They have no sense of introspection whatsoever, and that applies to 95% of the media.
Excuse me. So having said all of that, Peter, the jury is you know, partisan. The judge is obviously tainted. The prosecution is doing everything they can. He's probably going to be convicted here. I don't know if he's going to be sentenced to 4 years in prison, but I think that's what the max is at this particular point from what I've read thus far. What happens if and when he is convicted of these ridiculous charges? What happens to his candidacy? What happens to his ability to stay in the election and be elected and win if he ends up having a prison sentence hanging over his head?
Yeah, we're in an uncharted territory, but I would use the Obi-Wan Kenobi analogy. What's that statement he's made? You know, if you strike me down, I'll become more powerful than you can ever imagine. That is what's going to happen to Trump. You are seeing Trump getting not a giant share, but a scary share for Democrats of the black vote right now. At least that's what the polling shows. It's unprecedented what we've seen in terms of the polling data with respect to a Republican candidate. I think a lot of people find not just sympathy, but empathy with Trump. They understand. They may not be able to articulate it. You know, they may not be law professors who can say, well, they did this wrong, that wrong. But they get the sense that this is unjust. Now, there are those who don't care about that. They know the law. They may know the law, and they know what's going on, but they just don't care. They won't necessarily admit that, but they don't care. But a lot of people will say, "This, we don't want to go down this path. This is wrong. If they can do this to a billionaire former president, boy, they sure as heck can do it to me." So I think it's actually going to help. But I think what's going to happen is, if he gets convicted, which I think is highly likely, so we should all expect it. It's not going to be a surprise. I think, you know, Trump's going to be filing. I bet you there's going to be motions in the interim with respect to some of the procedural machinations that are going on right now. But in any event, there are going to be motions that are going to be interposed by his counsel. He's not going to jail, but it's going to drag things out. It's going to, unfortunately, occupy a lot of his time. I think I would say personally, for the first time yesterday, I saw some of Trump, some video of Trump from yesterday, where for the first time he looked haggard. I don't know if you've noticed it. He looked. Trump has indomitable energy. That's the first thing you notice when you meet with the guy. He is a machine. It's incredible. You know, I don't mean engage in hagiography here, but everyone who's met him says the same thing. This is the first time I've seen him where he looks worn. He looks a little bit haggard. I think the pressure of all this and the way he's being drawn into 5,000 different directions is having an effect on him. But I also do think that it is making the case, or is making sure that his supporters, to the extent they were disinclined, and I doubt there are many of them, to walk over hot coals to vote for him before, they're definitely going to walk over hot coals. I think the Democrats are making a big mistake, frankly. I think they're making Trump into a larger-than-life avatar for all of America that feels beleaguered by the system, feels beleaguered by those who are, elevated, the Democrats, the elites, the media, all those folks who've been, looking down on, and I'm using the cleanest term there, looking down on the rest of us as if we're not worthy. We're the ones who build the Americans. We fill the potholes. We fight the wars and all of those things. And we're not worthy? Are you kidding me? And Trump speaks for us, maybe not in a way that, some of us would like. I, Pat, frankly love it, because he, for the first time in my lifetime, I have somebody who's a standard bearer who I know is not backing down. And that's what scares the heck out of the left, because they know they could have intimidated or co-opted almost everybody else. We talked about Mike Johnson before. I'm not saying he's intimidated or co-opted, but, we had great hopes for him, and then he wilts and bends, and you have to sometimes. I understand you have to bend from time to time, but you know what? Donald Trump is the opposite of that, and that's why he elicits the kind of, let's face it, fear and just hysteria from the left, because he's going to do the right thing, America first. He's not going to be countenancing death to America chants or any other kind of disallegiance to the United States of America, and we love him for it.
Pete, most of what you just said, I agree with, but you were talking more about, how the people are going to respond to this, and about black votes, and about, his supporters, and so on and so forth. But I'm talking about from a legal perspective. If he gets sentenced to even a year, 6 months out of, potential 4-year maximum sentence, and again, I'm just going by what they're reporting, in this case or any of the others, if he gets sentenced to actual jail time or prison time, can he be the president?
I think he can legally. Be and will be. I think I'd have to think about this long and hard, Bob. You threw this at me. I've never seen something like this. My sense is that, yes, he can, because the American people voted for him. I don't know of any bars to being president of the United States of America. I've not seen that anywhere in the Constitution or any jurisprudence related to it. So if somebody
except
out
for prison
there
bars.
Who studied this knows, right, well, I don't think that's going to happen for a whole host of reasons that would never happen. There are going to be motions on top of motions, and I would expect, despite the fact that the New York Court of Appeals has shown itself to be what it is, that the Supreme Court would be the court of last resort, obviously, and I think that they wouldn't permit, they understand the titanic implications of this, and not to say that they would be doing something political, but I don't think that Donald Trump is going to spend 1 second, well, maybe a second, but not more than that, behind bars, and it will be the Democrats' worst nightmare. I think that they don't understand what they are doing politically. I think they're hoping that they can tie his hands and put him in a place where he can't be the candidate. Because, look, my dogs can beat Joe Biden right now based on his record. But Donald Trump is a danger to the whole project of the establishment, of leftism, of progressivism. He must be eliminated. Won't happen. Donald Trump is going to be running for the United States presidency. I think it's highly likely he wins. And then watch the left go absolutely nuts.
Well, they're already there. They're already absolutely nuts. That's why we're sitting where we are talking about this the way it is now. But it will be a new level. It will be on steroids or however it is, exponential increase. You're right, if indeed that goes down. Peter Kersenow fought through the illness, whatever it might have been. Great job, Peter. Thank you for doing it, my friend. I look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thanks, Bob.
You got it. That's Kersenow. It's 10:57. I can't believe I didn't even ask him about O.J. Because O.J. happened, when did he die? Thursday? Something like that? And Kersenow and I talked last Tuesday, so I haven't had Kersenow on since O.J. died, and everybody is reliving and experiencing what he meant to this country, what his murder of two people and his trial did to this country. I wanted to ask Peter that question because, of course, his status as a prominent attorney. Maybe we'll have to do that next time. Seth, how come you and Marianne didn't remind me to ask him about the juice? I'm putting this
totally
on you guys.
Yeah,
I'm putting this on you guys.
It's Marianne's fault.
It's Marianne. Oh, it's all Marianne. Okay,
yes.
Marianne, for crying out loud, get something done, for Pete's sake. All right, Always Right Radio, Hour 3 is coming up. Hey, Kyle Rittenhouse is going to be in Kent tonight. We're going to be there. And coming up next, we're going to talk to the chapter president of Turning Point USA at Kent State University. He's responsible for this event. We're going to talk to Brady next. Stay here. It's Always Right Radio, AM 1420.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
Okay, 7 minutes after 11 o'clock, and we continue on AM 1420, The Answer. And Seth, you got to push that button over there. I only need to hear me once, not twice. There we go. Thank you. Appreciate that. Marianne, get on it, will you? It is Tuesday, the 16th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. Sorry, a little inside baseball stuff there. We're having some fun with Marianne. We look to have some fun tonight at Kent State University as Kyle Rittenhouse continues his college speakers tour. He's been to a few different colleges already. Now he's coming to Northeast Ohio, and we plan to greet him. When I say we, I mean myself, a lot of friends, a lot of listeners, supporters, fellow patriots who are believers in the First Amendment and his right to speak and be heard, who are believers in the Second Amendment and his right to not die when people try to kill him, and using his Second Amendment rights to defend himself in that endeavor. And we are going to do whatever we have to do to make sure that he has a pleasant experience in Northeast Ohio, that he comes and is able to share his message without being shouted down, attacked, otherwise protested in order to try to cancel the event altogether, because that's just what happens at most left-wing universities. And that, of course, describes most universities. So joining us now to talk about the event tonight is one of the young men or young people who brought it and made it happen. He is the chapter president of Turning Point USA. His name is Brady Seymour. He joined us about a month ago to tell us about this, and he's now that the day is upon us, he's going to give us an update. Brady, it's good to have you back on the program. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you. So how have things gone over the course of the last month or so since you made the announcement that Kyle was going to be coming? I can tell you that I've seen all of the hate online, but what about you? How have things been?
Things have been going well. We've been getting a lot of support from friends around Ohio, and even people out of the state have been supporting us. It's been nice, but obviously there has been backlash, but you just kind of have to take that with a grain of salt, really.
Yeah, well, that was expected, obviously, and that's the whole reason I'm bringing a bunch of listeners down there to Kent with me to come and show support for him and for you and for everybody else that is a part of this, because it's already been announced. I saw a couple of notifications that there are staged protests planned, including a walkout. I don't exactly know how that serves their purpose. Are they going to show up and then leave and then think that it's going to be canceled, because there are going to be a whole lot of us who are going to stick around to hear him talk, right?
Yeah. We already have preparations set so that we can get as many like-minded people and people who are actually wanting to come and listen the entire time to get them into the room outside of the people who want to sabotage and, you know, take up a spot and just leave. So
do you know, Brady, like the format of the talk? Is it, you know, I know that at the Memphis one, which is the one that kind of brought our attention to this, there was a presentation that he gave, and then there was a Q&A session that was supposed to be a certain length of time, and they claimed that because they asked him all these hard questions, he ran off the stage and quit, and he said, no, we took questions right up until the exact moment of when it was supposed to end, and that's mm-hmm. when I left. Is that the situation here? Will there be a line of people to get to the microphone and ask him questions, or is it just a Kyle Rittenhouse talk?
He will be giving a speech, and then afterwards he'll be taking questions after.
Are these just questions and answers, or are they debate type? Is it a debate type of format? Because we've all seen, particularly conservative speakers show up at colleges and take open questions from some of the protesters or those who were opposed to them being there, and it turns into a long back and forth type of thing. Is he going to be willing to engage mm-hmm. with people, or how does that look?
Well, we want to get as many people to ask questions as possible, so probably going to avoid like long-standing debates. Maybe one follow-up question after, if the student has one. But we kind of want to avoid a long debate because we don't want one person to ask the question and take up the entire time for everyone else.
No, I agree with that. I guess the reason I was asking is I just want to make sure he is going to have the ability to defend himself against, the protesters, because they're going to come for the microphone and they're going to call him a killer and a murderer and all the other terrible things that they do. And I'm just wondering, is he going to be able to allow to engage with these individuals, or what the protocols are going to be? Because I think it has a potential to be a very, very good, positive learning event for everybody. But, that's not what they want. Those who are going to try to, to turn this thing into an attack on him, if given the opportunity to do so. So is there going to be a manager or somebody who is, saying, okay, enough is enough, we're tired of you yelling at him, let's take the microphone away?
Our people are going to be controlling the microphone, so the people in the crowd aren't going to be able to hold them. So if he's done with the question or the question isn't going to get anywhere, we'll just move on to the next person.
Good. So it sounds like, now are national Turning Point folks coming, or is this just basically all the local chapter-led?
There will be people who work for the national company that will be there. I don't know if they're going to be there to help run the event or just to watch and see how our chapter is doing.
Okay.
But there will be people from the national branch.
Brady Seymour is our guest. He is a student at Kent State University. He is also the chapter president of Turning Point USA for that chapter at Kent State. And Kyle Rittenhouse is the guest tonight. Brady, talk to me about security. Because a lot of people, when you say obviously there's backlash, yeah, there is. And a lot of times when protesters meet up with counter-protesters, bad things happen. I'm telling everybody that it was within the sound of my voice and my reach on radio and through social media that we will be, to quote President Trump, peaceful and patriotic in our support of Kyle Rittenhouse when we are there. But you know how it is. Sometimes other people are not necessarily committed to peace and patriotism. So what can you say about security?
Yeah, obviously keeping everyone safe through this event has been our number one priority. So we have Kyle's team is going to be there, his own personal security, and then the Kent police will be here, as well as Turning Point is going to send their own team. So there's going to be plenty of security here.
Okay, that's good. And what about outside too? Because I think you said 400, right? Is it what the student mm-hmm. center holds there?
Yeah.
Okay, so if there's significantly more than 400, there's going to be people outside. In fact, there might be some people who have no interest in going inside who just want to protest the event and cause trouble on the outside. Same question. Will there be, people, persons and property protected outside when Kyle is there?
Yeah, I'm assuming there's going to be, there were a lot of sign-ups for the police to fill this event. We were talking to them the other day, and they said there were a lot of people willing to work it. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot of them outside. They're setting up guardrails already right now. I'm actually looking at them setting it up. So I think everyone's going to be safe as long as, the other side doesn't start anything. I'm going to make certain our side doesn't either.
Well, that's yeah, and I completely agree with that last part. You know, I know that you and everybody at Turning Point, the responsible people who are going to, of course, encourage and ensure that anybody that's there to watch Kyle is going to be peaceful, particularly if you are a supporter of his. But the other side is a little bit different. They're the ones that like to goad and like to engage and to start things. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason I'm asking, because I know a lot of people are going to want to come there and have a peaceful event, and including some older folks who aren't, you know, they're not there for an old school 1950 style rumble. They're just to walk in, listen to a speech, clap and applaud and cheer, and then leave again without any problems. So I just want to make sure that they can feel safe in knowing that they're coming down to an event that is going to be protected. So Brady, what about you? Did you have any conversation with Kyle leading up to this, or just with the Turning Point folks who set it up?
Not much, honestly. I've been Kyle texted me this morning, and that's about it. But it's been pretty much just me and my group setting it up, getting ready, getting everything planned. And now the only thing we have to do is execute on the day. So.
Okay. Yeah, I was just wondering if you had any communication with Kyle and talk about what his expectations were. How many colleges has he been to? Obviously, he went to Memphis. I know that because that was the one that, you know, it turned into some stuff, and there was all kinds of flexing and bragging that they drove him out. They shut him down, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But how many schools has he been to? Do you know?
I don't know the exact number, but I do know it's not his first time. So he's been all over, and honestly, it's going to be a good time. We're not going to allow anyone to, you know, drive them out, as they say. I've heard that they are planning on busing in students from all over the state to protest, and I just got word that it might be one of the bigger protests for a Turning Point event.
I have no doubt. Kent State University, of course, is well known for you know its left wing campus and its protesting, you know, history. And obviously, we all know what happened on May 4th. You know, so certainly this is going to be a flashpoint, and not just around the state. Brady, I would imagine they're going to bus people in from schools outside of the state as well. They're going to come there, and those are the ones that I'm at, and that's the whole reason I ask about the security, because those are the people I'm worried about. These are professional agitators. We have seen them, you know, coming from outside of their own home communities. They did it during the George Floyd riots. They have done it during, you know, a lot of other events in which, you know, they're not happy. And so they go and try to export their, you know, their radicalism, if you will. And they don't care who they take down, especially if they go into other places. So you're probably going to have thousands of people there from inside the state and from outside the state. And that's the reason I'm curious as to the security. And I hope they are willing to be an active security force there, because you are going to have people who absolutely want to start trouble, and they want to start, you know, they want to start picking on people and, you know, destroying property and vandalizing cars and all kinds of other things that we have seen in the past. So that's why I'm curious to see what Kent State is committed to in terms of ensuring that this is a safe event.
Mm-hmm.
But Kent State,
yes,
so I know you said you talked to the police, but has Kent State campus security and has administration or anybody else said anything about this as well with respect to the commitment to safety and security, Brady?
We did talk to people in the administration about like allowing people in, and they gave us full discretion on who we let in. So we're going to be very thorough in who we let in and who we allow into the room. Mm-hmm. If anyone, you know, sparks our interest as someone who we can't really trust, we're not going to let them in. The administration has talked to us about security and keeping us safe, and they have ensured that we are going to be safe. We're going to be protected. There's, I think, 15 spots for the police officers to sign in, so it's a pretty large detail. And then we also have two other teams that are going to be there as well. So we have also contacted the Kent Sheriff as well. So it's going to be pretty well secured, and I don't think there is much to be worried about in security. I think we have all bases covered, and
I hope that's exactly correct. And again, I'm pretty confident that inside, especially if you just said there's going to be 15, it is a good size security detail. I agree. I'm more concerned on the outside part. you know, because, again, these people who are busing in aren't interested in hearing him speak. They're not there to go in and listen and debate and take the microphone. They are there to scream and curse and yell at attendees who are walking in and, you know, call them supportive of murder and all the other things like that. So I just want to make sure there's going to be plenty of security on the outside so that people feel safe in going. How long is he expected to talk?
I think 30 to 45 minutes.
Okay, and then the Q&A time afterwards, how long is that?
Oh, I think that was included. He said 30 to 45 to be honest.
Oh, so 30 to 45 minutes total? So the talk time is only going to be, okay, I didn't expect that. A lot of times these speeches will be 30 to 45 minutes themselves and then, you know, maybe half an hour of questions after that. So you're saying the whole thing will be done in under an hour?
I think so. It depends on how long the how many questions we get. I'm sure we'll have plenty of questions, but
I have no doubt of that. Yeah, I have no doubt about that. Okay, good, 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 good. And so, like I said, Brady, and if you just turned us on, by the way, Brady is the chapter president of Turning Point USA at Kent State University. Brady Seymour is his name, and he's bringing Kyle Rittenhouse to the event tonight. Just as there will be protesters and agitators who are going to be bussed in from around the state, as you say, and I'll add to that the out-of-state, do you know of any Turning Point chapters that are also going to bus in people to support the event?
Yeah, I've gotten text messages from Akron. Slippery Rock, PA is going to be there. There's going to be plenty of people who are on our side that are going to be there to help orchestrate the event and as well just be there to support.
Good, 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 good. Now, is this the first, I may have asked you this last time I talked to you, is this the first event that you guys have hosted since forming the Turning Point chapter there?
Last semester we hosted Yanmi Park.
Okay, I think I did ask you that. Okay, now that sounds familiar. I just wanted to kind of find out, what the experience was with this. This one is a little bit different, though, right? This one's gonna hit a little bit differently, given the fact that Kyle is so well known and famous to those who support him, and infamous to those who do not. So, all right. Well, listen, Brady, you're a brave and determined young man. I'm very, very glad to know that you and your friends and your supporters there at Turning Point are hosting this, knowing that there's going to be pushback, there's going to be problems, and it's probably something you'd rather not have to deal with, but you're choosing to take it on for the right reason. So congratulations to you in advance of the event. I hope it goes off smoothly without a hitch, that there is no there are no troubles, no disturbing actions being taken. I'm trying to avoid the V word here. I don't even want to think about violence, quite frankly. But I just want it to be a peaceful event where people can come and listen and be heard and then go away without any problems. So I know you're working very hard to make that happen. So on behalf of everybody, before it even gets started, thank you for your efforts here, Brady. The very best to you. And hopefully we'll be able to meet up when we come in and see you tonight, okay?
Yep. Thank you for all the support.
You got it. Thank you, Brady. All right, Brady Seymour. He is, a sophomore, Seth? Is he a sophomore? I think he said, yeah. So he's a young kid. So what's a sophomore, 19? He's probably 19 years old. 19-year-old kid who said, I'm going to dive into this and lead Turning Point USA, a chapter on Kent State University's very, very left-wing campus. I'm going to lead a conservative Turning Point chapter there, and we're going to bring Kyle Rittenhouse. Do you know what kind of stones that takes? Seriously. Kid's got grapefruits. I mean, that's huge. And by the way, the person that he chose to come, I just mentioned, what's Brady Seymour if he's a sophomore in college? He's 19. That's 2 years older than Kyle Rittenhouse was when he went to Kenosha, Wisconsin, to try to protect a friend's business and wipe graffiti off walls. That's 2 years older than Kyle. Kyle was a 17-year-old kid when he went there. And in the middle of these riots, he goes there to be a peacemaker and to help clean things. He didn't have to, but he did. He was smart enough to go there and be able to protect himself in the event that he had to. And sure enough, he did, because they tried to kill him. They beat him with a skateboard. One of them pulled a handgun out and pointed it at him. That was the point when he knew it was either defend yourself or die at this moment. And he chose to defend himself from the ground after he had been attacked and knocked down from the ground, from his half seated and half prone position. He fired his AR and protected himself. Two were killed, one was injured, and he stood trial for murder. For murder. Fortunately, the criminal justice system, for a change, worked. It worked properly. And the jury was able to see that this was no murder. This kid was being attacked and was being threatened with death. He had a handgun pointed at him. This kid defended himself. That's legal in the United States of America. Self-defense is still legal in the United States of America. That's news to a lot of people I know, particularly those on the left. But he was 17 when he did all of that. I'm watching some of the responses to Kyle's appearance at Kent State, and I'm seeing some of the haters posting pictures of him when he was crying on the stand when he was acquitted. And he was blubbering like a little baby. And you know what? He should have been, because he was still a little baby. He was. What he did, what he did, and what happened to him, he was a baby. When he was on trial, he was still a very young, scared kid. And he was facing life in prison. His life over, gone, done. And when the jury said not guilty, of course he broke down. And they're mocking him for it. Are you kidding? He's one of the bravest kids that I've ever seen. So we're going to be there. Are you going to be there? We'll take calls. 216-901-0945. 888-281-1110. Always Right Radio on AM 1420. The
Answer. The Answer.
Okay, it's 1134. Final segment of this Tuesday broadcast. Thanks again to Peter Kersenau. Joined us. Thanks also to Brady Seymour, young man, and at Kent State, who's a very brave kid. The fact that he's taking on all of this instead of just saying, "Hey, man, I've got a paper to write. I'll see you later." He's taking this whole thing on in the middle of his studies. That's a brave thing. Seth, you just talked to Portage County sheriffs?
Yes, I did. Yes.
What'd they say?
They said that they were aware of the event today, and they will have units as backup if needed. Kent will be handling the majority of everything, though.
So Kent State Police, isn't there Kent State? Are we talking about Kent State University Police or the City of Kent, Ohio Police?
I think it's going to be a mixture of both. I called Kent State Police and the other departments, and that's what I was told. So
okay.
But the Portage County will have units available as backup if needed. And I said, they said they're not anticipating any problems. And I said, well, that is an issue. I said, there's a lot of protests planned as of right now.
Yeah. Well, what are you seeing? What are you seeing? What protests are planned as of right now that you're seeing?
I saw online, obviously, the walkout that's going to happen. And they have over like 5,000 signatures, petitions, kids that don't want this to happen. And as you heard, I mean, they're going to be busing people in. I think it's going to be quite the scene tonight. And if you are familiar at all with this area, all it's going to take is a 100 students to try to block this parking lot, and you're going to have big problems.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the reason I was asking about the outdoors, you know, the outside security, because it sounds like the inside, they're going to have pretty good coverage there to make sure that Kyle is safe and everybody that's, you know, hosting this event, everybody that's attending this event is safe on the inside. But it's the outside that I'm worried about. Or at least, you know, I have questions about it. I won't say I'm worried about it, but I have questions about it because I do. I think there's going to be a few thousand people there. And only 400 are going inside. That means it's going to have a few thousand people outside. And those few thousand people aren't going to be there to sing. They're going to be there to cause problems, to make noise. And making noise is fine. But getting in somebody's face and making noise is not fine. Blocking the entrance to the parking lot, as you say, or blocking in vehicles, that's not fine. Those are the kinds of things that I'm talking about, and I just want to ensure that the police presence is going to be big enough on the outside. And I'm glad you got what you got, by the way. You know, the response from Portage County Sheriff saying they're there on backup. So you have Kent State University Police, you have Kent, Ohio Police, and you have Portage County Sheriffs who are available to make sure that there is, you know, peace kept on the outside of the event as well as on the inside.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting, though, because, again, the area that where the student center is, it's right along a main road. And so if you're going down that main road, there's a big parking lot that you can park in. Yeah. But again, it really depends on how these protests are going to line up and where the police are going to be, because it could get interesting over in that area.
Yeah, yeah, there's no question about it. So, yeah, I'm really surprised. By the way, hold on, I'm gonna click Excuse me, I want to click the ticket page again because I was really surprised to hear what Brady just said about the length of the presentation. You know, that it's going to be like 35, 45 minutes all told. That really surprises me. Let me see what it says here. It says 6 p.m.
And by the way, we did have people call in that said they are trying to sign up for tickets and they are not able to.
So they probably have reached way over their capacity. I'm sure that's exactly the case.
I would guess. Yeah,
yeah, they're way over their
capacity.
Whether
it's protesters or actual people that want to go, I'm sure that they're way over their ticket.
Yeah. Yeah. The page event details, by the way, says 6 p.m. start, does not list an end time. So doors open 5:30. Event details, 6 o'clock start at the Kiva Auditorium / Student Center on campus. So, that's the reason I tried to get this word out there as quickly as we could a month ago when we found out about this happening. So that and I posted that on my social media then, saying, get your tickets now, because it's probably going to be shut down at some point. One of my concerns, like I said, Seth, is that they will honor. I hope that they honor everybody who actually did get a ticket in time, including all of our crew, because what they did at Memphis, according to Charlie Kirk, what they did at Memphis is they changed the ticketing procedure, saying those initial tickets were deemed to be unacceptable for whatever reason. They started a new ticket distribution thing, and they only did it to the protesting students on campus. It was like on the down low. And so that the only people whose tickets were accepted were the students, were the ones who were there to obviously cause problems for him.
And I tried to get tickets fairly early in this process, and I couldn't get them.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just got a couple of calls from people saying, and not giving me anything.
Yeah, well, and that's to be expected. But I'll still say this, though, in all truthfulness, I hope people come anyway. Even if you can't get in, just to be outside to show support. And just as assuredly as you're going to see people carrying signs that say Kyle Rittenhouse murderer and gun violence and there's going to be BLM, because as this, of course, happened in the middle of the George Floyd riots and the BLM protests, you're going to probably see Antifa signs. But just as assuredly as you're going to see those things, I would love to see just patriotic USA stuff. I would just love to see people wearing flags. I would love to see people holding signs that say USA. If you want to hold a sign with the Gadsden flag or the Second Amendment or something like that on it, I would like people to know that there is support for self-defense. There is support for the Second Amendment. There is support for the First Amendment. These people are there to shut him down so he can't speak. They're literally trying to stop him from his public speech. And thus, and our assembly to be able to hear it. All of the elements of the First Amendment come into play here, or most of them anyway. And I would love to see people, putting on a show of support, peaceful and patriotic show of support. Anybody gets in your face, walk away. Anybody tries to, confront you or goad you or whatever, be what we are, smarter than they are. And is, of course, to say no, just don't engage. But just be there to support, because I think it's an important event. And by the way, I'll tell you this. Kyle Rittenhouse probably wouldn't have been my first choice of Turning Point USA speakers to come to a Northeast Ohio campus. I love that Turning Point USA is on so many campuses, hundreds and hundreds of them around the country. And I don't know if there's a chapter on every campus in Northeast Ohio or not. But the fact that somebody started one at Kent State University is very, very uplifting. It's very, very encouraging. And then secondly, he wouldn't be my first choice. There's a lot of speakers. I mean, obviously, everybody would love to have Charlie Kirk come, but he can't come to everything. And that's why they have this, great list of people. I wouldn't have made Kyle Rittenhouse my first choice. But I will tell you, and I'm being 100% honest with you here, I am glad he was the choice that they made. Because this is a very important time to talk about what happened to him. We are in a... Seth, I told the whole story yesterday of my experience watching the movie Civil War, which just came out on Friday. And I hope you and Heather get a chance to go see it soon, by the way. What's that?
We will. We will. Yeah.
Yeah. We watched it on Saturday, and it was a very, very eye-opening look. It's a very revealing look at what can happen. And I will tell you, what happened to Kyle Rittenhouse was not dissimilar from that, because he had to defend himself against other Americans who just decided this kid is protecting a business and erasing and washing graffiti that says BLM off the wall. therefore he is a racist, therefore we need to kill him. That's not that far off from what I described in that movie. It's just, it's not. They tried to kill him because he was there actually supporting, you know, peace rather than destruction. You know, he was there supporting peaceful protest as opposed to setting a business on fire. He was there supporting peace instead of, you know, vandalizing and graffitiing businesses and smashing windows and so forth. So therefore, they said he had to die. And then he had the gall to not want to die and to actually defend himself, say, no, I prefer to live. And he shot and had to do that. I'll tell you what, it's timely having him here. While he might not have been my first choice, it is timely having him come to speak on what it looks like to see what should be peaceful protest evolve into something like this. And of course,
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.